Hello, Canucks fans. Welcome into episode 158 of the Canucks Speakeasy Podcast. My name is Pete.
My name is Doug.
And I'm Brendan, a.k.a. J-Bo.
Canucks got a busy week. We got a four-game flight. Doug, take it away.
The Canucks hosted the Florida Panthers in Roberto Luongo's Ring of Honor night and came away with a 4-0 victory, fittingly enough, with Thatcher Demko getting the shutout. Dakota Joshua had two goals. Brock Besser and Andre Kuzmenko each had a goal as well, and the third line continued to be the Canucks' most consistent line.
Doug, we were at that game. That was a fun one. Unfortunately, the next game was not as fun. The Canucks head to Minnesota. We all love those fabulous 11 a.m. starts, but they did come away with a point. Manager losses, lose 2-1 in the shootout. Again, the third line contributes. Teddy Bluger, as I like to call him, Jungle Bluey, gets the only Canucks goal. It was a snooze fest, but hey, take the point.
Then the Canucks went to Chicago and tried to lay an egg in the first period, being outshot, I believe, as much as 10-0. But found their legs after Nick Foligno opened the score for Chicago. Petey on the power play. Dakota Joshua, again, that third line's been fantastic. They get the job done. Besser, Mikheyev with the other goals. They gave up a goal in the third period after Nikita Zadorov stood up for Petey after taking a hit. He got thrown out of the game. Chicago scored, but Canucks held on for a 4-3.
The Canucks then continued the road trip into Nashville, and what was probably the Canucks' most complete game of the year came away with a 5-2 victory. Four Canucks had 2 points. Quinn Hughes, Ilya Mikheyev, Elias Pettersson, and Pia Suter, who has returned to the lineup. And again, it was a four-line effort from this team.
Fun week, man. The Canucks just keep on rolling, and we got the full team here today as well. All three of us are on. Happy holidays to everyone out there as well, whatever you celebrate. Yeah, guys, it's good to get everyone together before we take a week off next week for Christmas. It's fun to talk Canucks, and we got a lot of things to talk about.
Oh, God, yeah, we do have a lot to talk about. I mean, they're playing... I think a lot of us wondered, you know, during that stretch where it was seemed like it was win one, lose one after their, you know, really, really good start. You wondered, you know, are they regressing into what, you know, maybe closer to what we expected them to be? Or was this, you know, was this their blip? Was this what a blip for them looks like? And, you know, I mean, they've come back with a vengeance, and, you know, they haven't always been at their best, but, you know, when you are sound structurally, sound defensively as they are, you will always find ways to stay in hockey games. And when you have elite talent like they have, you can find ways to win hockey games. And at times hockey games that you don't necessarily, maybe, I mean, I don't think, looking back at any of these games over the last week, there wasn't a game or the last while that they've won. There hasn't been one where I'm like, oh, well, they were completely outplayed to the point where they didn't deserve to win. They just weren't at a level that we've seen or that we saw earlier in the season up until, you know, as you pointed out, Pete, that or Doug, that game in Nashville where they were fantastic. I just thought, I loved the way they played. I love the fact that they took that game and used it as a litmus test. And talking before the game said the things that they needed to do. They needed to take away the middle of the ice and really, really be on top of, you know, guys pinching in. You know, Nashville loves to pinch those defensemen in, you know, and they did a really, really good job of it. They didn't give up a lot, you know, and that first period was one of the best first periods on the road that I've seen them play in a while. You know, outside of that sort of that bizarre breakaway they gave up at the end of the first, they didn't really give up much of anything. And they got their chances. You know, when you play really, really well defensively, and I think, you know, at times it takes some convincing for players to understand this. But if you do your job defensively, at some point that other team's going to give you your opening. And, you know, when you got a guy like Petey, You know, I mean, he's going to take his chances more often than not. And, you know, I mean, even Niels Omon, you know, taking his chance, you know, and that one may have been a little more fortunate, but still you got to be in the right place to score that goal. So, I mean, you can't be anything but encouraged. You know, you come off of that win one, lose one, you know, we had that really bad game against the Devils. And, you know, we all wondered where you would go after that, and where they went after that was back to being, you know, a really good hockey team, which, you know, has to be encouraging for every fan out there, because they haven't hit the panic button at any point.
Yeah, I also think, you know, when the Canucks were struggling, you know, mid November, they had played, I think it was 12 games in 18 nights, something crazy like that. They were playing every other night, and, you know, they were tired, and even Tocchet admitted that the team was tired. And, you know, I think you're going to struggle on those nights, right? And we've seen this with the Canucks lately, is they, you know, that first period, right? They just don't have their legs under them at the beginning of these games. And then once they start rolling, heading into the second period, like last night was the perfect example against Nashville. Now Nashville scored a goal to make it 2-1. And then I think it was within a minute the Canucks had scored two goals to go up 4-1, you know, and they just kind of like really kind of put their stamp back on that game. And they proved to Nashville, who was the hottest team in the NHL going into last night's game, they were, you know, the hottest team in the NHL record wise and Canucks stomped them. And, you know, I don't remember, especially those two afternoon games, which are usually, you know, penciled in losses. And sure, we did, you know, lose in the shootout to Minnesota, but even that Chicago game, like those are usually trap game 101 for the Canucks. And to come away with 3 out of 4 points in those two games, that's huge. Massive.
Yeah, I'll take it 100%. Folks as well, you can follow us out there on Twitter. I'm at Pete_Gass. The podcast is at Canucks Speak.
You can follow me on Twitter at Doug Venn and check out our playlist, which is on Spotify and Apple Music. It's the Canucks Speak Easy Outro playlist.
And I'm at Jabo_Vancouver. That's J-A-B-O. And please follow us on YouTube. We are on there. Hit the subscribe button and watch our videos that are posted almost weekly. Won't be next week, but the following week.
And also, no one has commented, if you're watching on YouTube, on my excellent hat choice for today, my Santa hat. I was hoping that someone would say something about that. It's
stylish, man.
Right, it's something beautiful. It's tough to get the headphones around this one. And Doug, I wanted to ask, is your vinyl in the background today? That sure looks like a copy of the Big Lebowski soundtrack over your right shoulder.
Yes. So that's the Big Lebowski soundtrack, and then this is Billy Woods Maps right over here.
Oh, nice. Hey, we saw Billy Woods this past summer down at
we did
the place formerly known as Venue, whatever it's called now.
I think it's called The Pearl.
Oh, yeah. That sounds about right. Okay, guys, where do we want to start? I'm just going to start off with this, actually. Minor trade for the Canucks. Just get this out of the way. Jack Stanika sent out of town. Nick Sitchek, again, I'll probably got the name wrong, and a sixth rounder coming back. This sounds like it was just basically a move to help out the Abbotsford blue line, which has taken a ton of injuries, get Stanika off the books. It's a bit of a cap saving move, and reacquire a pick. It's a very minor move, but it also just kind of, for me, it shows that the organization is very aware of some of these details and what they're trying to do. I really have no opinion on this trade, to be honest, at the moment. If it's I think it's a slight win for the Canucks, just because I don't think Jack Stanika was factoring into the plans for the team, even though he scored one goal in 5 games this year for them. Just a minor bit of tinkering, but again, another trade for the Canucks.
I mean, yeah, it's hard to sit there and go, I mean, no, first of all, I don't do wins and losses on trades of any kind the day of, because I think that's ridiculous, because no one really knows the answer to whether a trade's a win or a loss until usually, you know, it takes at least a year or two. In terms of this one, though, I mean, like for me, it was just a sign that this organization understands, well, you know what, we made this trade, it didn't work out the way that we had planned. Other guys had moved up past Jack Stanika on the depth chart down in Abbey, And, you know, let's move them along and get something in here that can help us. And what they needed in Abbey right now was help down on the blue line. They've been decimated by injuries on the blue line, and this gives them an opportunity to fill a hole there. So yeah, beyond that, it's hard to really analyze. You know, I don't know if Cech's going to be an NHL player at any point, and you know, quite honestly, Jack Stadnicka probably wasn't going to be for the Canucks anyways. So you get some organizational depth in an area that you needed, and you move a guy along that just wasn't working out. So, you know, that's, you know, in terms of wins or losses, it's, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I think, you know, I also think this is kind of a do right by the Canucks management system or management team. Stadnicka was a standout at training camp, and, you know, he did make the team out of training camp, and he was a really good player. And then I think it was they made the Lafferty trade and ended up sending him down just before the start of the season, which kind of bumped him down the depth chart. But I think he did everything they asked in the offseason, and I think they wanted to kind of do right by him. It also saves Aquilini real dollars by making this trade, right? Because I believe he was on a two-way contract. So he was still making his like 200 grand, I think, playing in the A, where now I think, you know, Cech, I don't think is making that much, but yeah, I know it saved the team real dollars. And, you know, like you said, the blue line's banged up down in Abbotsford. You recoup a 6th round pick. And yes, I know it's a 6th round pick, but they still count for something, right? It's a crapshoot, and it's San Jose's 6th round pick. So that's going to be a 5th round pick pretty much. Yeah. So yeah, I think it's a, you know, you can't say, oh, this is a win for Vancouver or anything like that, but it's a solid trade. It makes sense. And to me, it just shows, I think you mentioned this, Pete, the details of this management group. You know, they're constantly looking at how to get better and what to do. And, you know, right now they saw a bit of an issue down in Abbotsford and they addressed it.
I mean, there's so many things to talk about on the ice, but just, kind of going on with that and talking about management right now. I don't know if you guys saw or caught any of the interview that Nikita Zadorov did on one of the podcasts out there, which, again, the name's just blanking on me. But he had a lot of praise for the Vancouver organization in terms of how they treat the players, how the coaches work with the players, the vibe among the team with the coaches and the players themselves. Like, this is a far cry from even a year ago, you know? Like, this is, it sounds like that a lot of these details, starting at the top, filtering down into the players, and it really helps when your management, your coaching staff are on the same page. But not only that, you're not running a skeleton crew, right? Like, I mean, it's not just one GM and that's it. You know, president of hockey ops, you've got assistant GMs, you got a shit ton of assistant coaches out there. And Zadorov coming into that, and he said Buffalo is good. He omitted Calgary from the quotes that I saw, but it's nice to hear that these levels of detail, it seemed to be happening on a lot of levels, and that can't be overlooked for a lot of the team's success. I mean, you look at what Casey DeSmith has been doing in net. You look at what Sam Lafferty, you mentioned, has done since he's brought in some of the free agents in the middle, like Bluger and Suter. Susie was having a good season until he got hurt. There's a lot of these moves that there seems to be a lot of thought that goes into it. And it's very refreshing to see right now that what's happening off the ice as well as what's happening on the ice.
So Dropping the Gloves, that's the name of the podcast, just to
thank you.
Give them credit. And that's the one with John Scott.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nice to see that there's just some continuity from top down, you know, that this isn't sort of a fly by the seat of your pants type organization. That's, you know, when we talk about structure on the ice, there's structure off the ice as well. And they're trying to get this back to where it was, you know, a decade ago, where, you know, players want to come here and play, not just because of what they see on the ice, but also because of what they see off the ice, you know, and Zadorov speaking about, you know, coming to practice, and you have, you know, I think he said 9 coaches. And, you know, I think for some of us, you're kind of like 9 coaches, but then you look at the coaches and you're like, okay, you know, imagine you're a new guy to the team, and you know, you have, you know, a Hall of Famer like Henrik Sedin comes up to you and wants to talk to you about your game and how he thinks he can make you better, a better player. And, you know, you'd be foolish not to sit there and listen to him and want to soak that all in. Or an Adam Foote, who is one of the best stay-at-home defensemen of his generation, or Sergei Gonchar, one of the best offensive defensemen of his era. And all of these guys played over 1,000 games in the NHL. I think between the five of them, I think I did the math today, it was somewhere like 6,200 something.
Jesus.
Games in the NHL between five guys, and they're all on the ice with you. And, you know, they want to talk to you about what they think they can do to make you a better player. I mean, that, I mean, you know, and you, and I was wondering this today, as you look around the league, you look at what Ottawa did. They hired a guy like, you know, Daniel Alfredson, and, or Edmonton hiring Paul Coffey, and you wonder, there's a little bit of a copycat situation going on here with other teams hiring, you know, guys with maybe not necessarily a ton of coaching experience, but definitely with a lot of NHL experience. And the wonder if that maybe, you know, goes a lot further, especially if you're assistant coach. You're not a head coach. You don't have to make the decisions, the big decisions anyways, but you know, you're out there and you can certainly help in a lot of ways. And you see with this Canuck coaching staff, and certainly the way this team's playing, that it's night and day from where it was, you know, 365 days ago. I mean, so Zadorov's, you know, comments were good. It makes you feel good because it makes you feel like this organization is on the right track to, again, being a destination where players do want to go.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing that I think, just bringing up with Zadorov is, you mentioned this in your game flight, Brendan, was Zadorov sticking up for Petey. And then Petey, after that game, said he appreciated that, because that is something the last 4 or 5 years that, you know, I remember Brock Besser got run. I think it was a LA King player. I forget who it was, but kind of, I think it was, maybe it was Kyle Clifford. I forget who it was. Anyways, ran him from behind. No one did anything, right? And it's nice to see Zadorov right away go after him. And I know the argument, well, it was a clean hit. Can you not do a clean hit anymore? I mean, yes, you can. But it's also, it's just one of those things, right? Where it's like, hey, that's our star player. You know, if someone did that to McDavid.
30 years ago, you could have blown on Wayne Gretzky and Dave Semenko was going to be there to kick your fucking ass.
Of course.
So regardless of whether it was a clean hit or you know, whatever, I mean, the idea that taking liberties on your best players, you know, it wasn't accepted then and it's not accepted now. You know, I mean, you don't want to see Petey getting hit at all.
Of course,
you know, whether it's clean or dirty. So, you know, I mean, because I've heard that too, Doug, that, you know, I mean, should you have done it? I mean, you know, because a game in December doesn't mean as much as a game in April when it's going to get even worse. So you better set a tone now that you're not going to put up with it.
Exactly. And I think that's exactly it. You set the tone. So come playoff hockey, come, you know, April, you know that the other team knows they can't get away with it, because a guy like Zadorov is gonna, and you know who's a perfect example of that is Rick Tocchet. Like when he was on that Pittsburgh Penguins team, do you think guys would go after Mario with Tocchet on the ice? Of course not. And Tocchet wasn't the biggest guy, but I mean, you know, Tocchet really appreciated Zadorov doing that, you know. And yes, maybe at the time of the game, you know, you could question the time and what the score was, but you know, you got to ingratiate yourself to the team, and I think Zadorov did that. And yeah, it's funny how much a year changes the narrative for this franchise, because last year they were a tire fire. They were the laughing stock of the league, and there was the way they were handling Boudreau. You know, nobody seemed like they were happy. Demko was hurt. You know, you had two backup goalies, you know, trying to scratch out wins for this team. And now, you know, they're second in the entire NHL for points, just behind the Vegas Golden Knights by one.
And also Nick Sechek in his first game down in Abbotsford, 10 penalty minutes as well. So another guy coming into the organization and going out there and doing that. I mean, also just the Canucks in general are hitting, and they're hitting hard. Like in that game against Nashville in the first, Joshua, big hit. Ian Cole, big hit.
Without his
Nikita
stick.
Zadorov. Yeah. Zadorov, big hits. You're now got several guys. I mean, Sam Lafferty's not afraid to shy away. JT Miller will hit. Even Petey's
Hoglander.
Yeah, I mean, you got a couple of those Hoglander guys too. Like, everyone is buying into this, right? It's again, this is something that we haven't seen. The Canucks are third in the league in hits. And they're up there in the block shots tallies as well. They're playing a physical, hard game. And when they're on, like they were against Nashville, which again, I think was one of their best games of the season, they're pressing. Nashville is not only are they have guys all over them, but as soon as a guy has the puck, there's a Canuck coming at them and the Canuck is going to finish the hit. And this is something that we haven't seen a lot. But man, Joshua, Cole, and Zadorov, those three guys in particular, the way they're finishing hits, man, I love to see it.
Yeah. The Canucks are on when the gaps through the neutral zone are non-existent. Like, to me, I know the Canucks are playing good hockey when the neutral zone, they have control of it. They're not turning the puck over, and they're always there. There's no easy space anywhere, and that's what we saw in Nashville. And I mean, they're third in the league. I looked it up today because I wanted to see where they were in hits. They're third in the league in hits. Now, they played more games than a lot of teams, but still, you know, in recent years, they wouldn't be anywhere near that. And like, you don't have to be a big guy to be physical. You don't have to be a person who hits often to be effective doing that. I mean, Höglander is probably the best example. Get in on the forecheck. Doesn't have to be a big hit, but it has to be a hit for position, which is what he does really, 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 really well. But yeah, that Nashville game, I mean, I really thought that Joshua hit loses his stick. I mean, like how many players just kind of get a little paralyzed? You lose your stick. What do I do? There wasn't a hesitation. He said, well, I don't have my stick, but I am 6 foot whatever and weigh 200 whatever, so I can do something. And he absolutely leveled the Predators player. And it was clean. It was nice. And it was just good to see. And you're seeing that from Zadorov as well, you know, stepping up and not being afraid to lay that hit. And you know, there was a reason they brought in Zadorov. I mean, it's quite simple. Big defenses win come playoff time. They stand the test of that run that can be really, really long. And if you look back on that 2011 Canucks team, that defense wasn't very big. And by the end of that playoff run, by game 7 of the Stanley Cup final, they had lost the war of attrition. They didn't lose that series in 2011 because they were the worst team. They lost it because they were the ones that couldn't stand up to that war that it takes for 3 months of hockey playing every other night. You know, and this organization clearly understands that. That's why they're getting bigger, tougher, stronger. We're not going to be the ones taking the hits. We're going to be the ones laying the hits.
Yeah. And you know what? I think on both ends too, you guys are talking about the hits and that's a huge part of it, but shot blocking as well. Like mm-hmm. Ian Cole is a shot blocking monster. Same with Zadorov. And if you got that big body, like you're talking about, Brennan, with the big physical defenseman, you know, they take up so much more space on the ice. And, you know, those shooting lanes become even smaller because you've got a guy that, you know, can get in front of the puck and block shots. And right now, this team is really bought in. And I think that's one of my biggest takeaways so far, is just credit to all the players because they really did buy in. You know, I know Tocca at the end of last year said he was going to challenge these guys and, you know, make sure that they all came to training camp prepared and ready. And even a guy like Joshua, who we're all praising, and he's really turned a corner. Tocca was upset with Joshua at training camp, right? Called him out a couple of times. Mm-hmm. I believe Joshua sat in the press box a couple of games this year so far as well. And he's responded really, really well. And now that third line with Blueger, him, and Garland has been our most consistent, best line, and probably the best third line I can remember from this Canucks teams going back to the 2011-2010 days.
Yeah, it's one of the best third lines in the league. Yeah, it is actually, in terms of what they're doing and contributing offense, like if in the game flight, they're all over the place there. And I mean, yeah, Garland's not scoring, but he's been fantastic. And this is something when you look at the Andrei Kuzmenko situation, it's like, what is he got to do to get back into this? I mean, obviously he's got to buy into this a bit more. He's not quite getting it. Kuzmenko has the talent to be in this lineup, but he's not getting it done right now. And you see other guys who are jumping past him, you know, Phil DiGiuseppe draws back into the lineup for him. Neil Zaman has become a regular in the lineup. That third line isn't going anywhere. So that really, when you have four healthy centers and that third line going. That really only leaves a couple spots left. But this Kuzmenko story is really the only one that is kind of a bit of a, what do you do with Andre Kuzmenko?
It was inevitable that one of the, this was going to happen. You know, I mean, I like to post that video of what Bieksa said around the time that Tocchet got hired last year, where he said what AV did, that AV came in and he felt that his job was to tear everyone down, you know, and at that point you figure out who you can win with and who you can't win with, you know, and Tocchet is doing that as well right now. And I mean, he's done it with a few guys and, but he's figuring out who he can win with. So the question for Kuzmenko is, Can he, everybody's like, oh, well, Tocchet's trying to turn him to something he's not. Fuck that. He's not trying to turn him into a bruiser hitter and all that. He's trying to get him into the battle. And I don't care whether, I don't care who you are. If you want to win in the playoffs, you better be ready to battle. You have to. You can't be a perimeter player and expect to be effective when the ice is just being choked off by teams that are as good as you, if not at times better than you are. You have to be willing to go a little deeper, push your game past what you thought you could. And you're seeing that with other guys. You know, Connor Garland is that F1 on that third line. I mean, he's in on the forecheck first and he's winning puck battles left, right, and center. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's winning way more than he's losing. And it sets the tone because then you've got Dakota Joshua following up. And, you know, if you can win that puck, I mean, Dakota Joshua is going to win a lot of battles himself. He's just big. And they're teaching him body positioning and stick positioning for a guy that's that big and that strong. And you see it. They're by far the best cycling line the Canucks have right now. And that to me is one area that I'm really impressed with, you know, not just the third line, but a lot of these, like, they're learning how to cycle, which in the past, it just, their cycle was so disjointed and it just like it, and it never amount to anything. Now this entire roster is learning how to cycle and they're learning how to create offense off of the cycle, which come playoff time, that's how you score. Cause you're not scoring off of the rush the way you may get to in the regular season. Odd man rushes just aren't what they are in the regular season, especially if you're going to go up against LA and Vegas, who are, you know, as good of a defensive teams as you're going to find in the NHL.
Well, I mean, right now it sounds like the Sedin effect, right? Who are the arguably the two best cycle players in the last 20 years of the game? It was Daniel and Henrik.
They changed the way it was done.
Yep.
Exactly. And now I think we're starting to see that skill, you know, them being on the ice, practicing with these guys, you know, giving them strategy and positioning tips, pay dividends. And it's great. It's great to see. I have a question for both you guys. What is your guys' biggest surprise of the year? Whether that's Besser and his goal totals, you know, the third line, is it, you know, Quinn Hughes and the way he's played to start the year? What is each of your guys' biggest surprise so far this year with the Canucks?
You want to go first, Pete?
Do you have one? I got a couple.
I do.
So
I do. I mean, mine's 19-0 leading after 40 minutes.
That's a good one.
Yep. That's a good one.
With the beginning of last year, it just felt every game there was an inevitability that they were going to find a way to lose the game. And I had, you know, I'm no expert, but to me, like, being able to hold a lead isn't rocket science. I mean, you've done your job. You don't have to score another goal. You've done that. So what your job is to play aggressive, but play smart. And they're starting to learn how they're really doing a really good job of that. Short shifts, pucks in deep every time. Like if the puck's 200 feet away from your net, they're not going to score. And then wait, just do play smart, aggressive and wait, because the other team have to score and they're going in. If you do your job properly, they're going to hand you chances to score, whether that be an odd man rush or take a penalty. Cause we've seen the Canucks score when they've had the lead on the power play as well. It's just doing the little things right and forcing the other team to have to push and to take chances, because you don't have to do that. And last year it was either they were going all out or they were completely passive. They didn't know how to play a smart, aggressive game. And it's just, as a guy that has been screaming to want to see this for a few years with the lead, it really makes me feel good, because I'm enjoying watching it. It's a stark contrast to what we were seeing a year ago.
Yeah, that's a really good call. I mean, last year, the worst situation for the Canucks was to be up by two goals, and just nobody
heading
felt
into
good
the
about
third
it.
Period.
Or, yeah, or you three just goals,
you're
right?
yeah, you were just yeah. waiting for it. And this year, I think that's a great one. I mean, for me, there's a couple of things. I was like, I was gonna originally. When my first thought came to mind, I was thinking the Nils Höglander and the way he's emerged. We've already talked a bit about Connor Garland. He was another guy in that third line, so I'm going to kind of let that go. I think for me, it's the play of the two goaltenders. Overall, I was going to originally just say Casey DeSmith, but I also want to get Thatcher Demko in there, because Thatcher Demko is obviously much maligned last year, and we weren't really sure if he was going to get back to that form, and he is in that form. And Casey DeSmith, love watching interviews with this guy as well. He's another guy who really seems like a team player. He was pretty stoked that he got two of the last three starts as well, but having this solid backup who has really good chemistry with Demko, it sounds like, off the ice as well. You're working with Ian Clark. This is all of a sudden, I don't think they're going to get the Jennings, but they're a tandem that looks like a Jennings caliber. And the Canucks last year basically had two backups all season, right? And so now you have a true 1A and a true backup. But I'm surprised by how much Demko has returned to his form. I am a bit surprised. I admit that. I wasn't sure after that injury if we were going to see the old bubble Demko, but we have. But I'm also impressed, because I didn't know a lot about Casey DeSmith, admittedly. And I've been quite impressed with his play, and both of them, their rebound control, their body positioning, and where they're taking shots has just been fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. I think the goalies have been amazing. For me, and I said this in one of our earlier episodes to start the year, I'm blown away about how much this team is scoring goals. They're first in the entire league in goals for with 325. They're 11 up on number two, or pardon me, 125, not 325.
I'm like 325. Wow. Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's a lot of games against San Jose.
Yeah,
exactly. No, they have 125 goals for, and then Colorado is second with 114. They also have the most goals for per game at 3.79. And again, Colorado is second with 3.56. The goals for me, I thought this team was going to play a much more laid back defensive structure. Obviously, that's what you thought was going to happen with talking about structure and playing in their own end. And they have, pardon me, they have been a lot better in their own end, but they're still exploding for massive goal totals, which is huge. And, I think that just goes to show defense often, a good defensive structured team can lead to more offense, and they've got the top end skill guys to get those goals.
Yeah. And it's, 3.79. Is that what you said? Goals per game.
Yes.
That's pretty impressive. That's getting close to four. One of my other things I was going to say when he asked that biggest surprise, I was going to say the price of beers at Rogers. It's gotten a little exorbitant over there.
Okay. I thought you were going to tell me they've gone down. I'm like,
No. It's
that would be a real surprise, Brendan.
I went to the nice beer place and got the 20 ounce, two of the 20 ounces. And after a tip, it was $53 for two beers.
Ooh.
Yeah, wow. 20 that, the 20 or 24 ounce. I think it was 24 ounces. 24
that better
ounces.
Be the best beer you've ever had.
Oh my God, there's like a little gold nugget in the bottom or something in there. Okay, so like this is something, 3.79 goals per game. Now, one of the big things in Vancouver that's come up in the last week, and I mean it's been around all season, but analytics has really entered the conversation lately. And I wanted to talk a little bit about analytics, because I think analytics are fascinating. I think they do have a place in the game, but I think it's also in how you look at the stats and how you deliver it can tell whatever story you want. Like any stat is easily manipulated. You can cherry pick any stat. I do this all the time, admittedly. I put this out on Twitter. I'll cherry pick stats because I think this is cool. And I can put something together and it tells a part of the story. It doesn't tell the whole story. And analytics do that too. What we're seeing right now is, I'm going to admit it right away. Analytics are cool. They're neat, but I'm not the biggest fan of them because I think they only tell a very small part of the story. I think it's very good for backing up things that you see throughout the game, but I guess I'm not really liking how it's becoming the forefront of the argument. It's like, okay, the Canucks are going to regress. Yeah, their PDO is the highest in whatever, like, and I can't even remember exactly. It's an insanely high PDO. But on the same note, they're playing well, and so I'm not concerned about that. Is if they weren't playing well and you had those metrics, for me, I'd be more concerned. But I just kind of want to know what your guys' thoughts are on analytics, because it's really, in a way, it's kind of being thrown out there to take a little bit of the shine off of what is going on with the season. It's like, oh yeah, they're playing well, but it's not sustainable. But here we are in another 7-game streak where we're getting points. We're 6-0-1 in the last seven. We're 7-1-1 since Nikita Zadorov entered the team. Like, they keep winning and they keep playing well, and we're almost halfway through the season. So I just kind of wanted to know, what do you guys think of analytics and how it pertains to you as a fan, and also how it pertains to this Canucks team?
Well, I mean, they're here to stay. I at times think they're extremely lazy. I think they're for people who don't watch all the games. It's the way for them to justify takes, you know, like PDO, for instance. You know, I mean, you look at, you know, the Canucks scoring relative to how many shots they're taking, right? And you go, but to me, like, that doesn't tell the whole story. It doesn't tell the story how they're generating chances. The Canucks aren't like LA. LA likes to shoot everything at the net. They're going to shoot everything at the net. Canucks don't do that. Canucks are a little more methodical in the way that they try to create chances. They like to hold on to the puck. They like to wait for that one really, really good chance. And why? Because they have... Well, exactly. It's the Sedins. And because they have the skilled players that can really capitalize on those chances. Maybe they're only getting one or two, but I like their chances of scoring at least one of them. And so, like, you go back through the games. Like, I mean, you go back through the games that the Canucks have played. And you know what? The game in Nashville, I'll give it to them. That Suter goal was a little lucky. That Oman goal was lucky. But I'll even say it with the Oman goal. When you play a pressure game, you're going to get the other team making mistakes. That's why you play pressure tactics. You want them to rush the puck and make that odd mistake. And again, when you have players capable of capitalizing on those mistakes from your opponents, it makes it easier on you. I mean, both goals in the first period in Nashville, Petey was given the slightest window and he turned on the Jets and he's got a shot to bury that, you know. And Oman in front of the net, you know, they went in, they forechecked hard and they capitalized on a mistake because of the pressure they put on, you know. I mean, I think it's just so lazy. You watch the way the Canucks are playing, and I would say this, if they, like, last year or 2 years ago during the Boudreaux bump, when it just seemed like they were scoring, but, you know, they were giving up a whole hell of a lot at the other end. And just, you're like, I don't know where this is headed. Whereas you feel a little more comfortable where this is headed because they are playing so well in their own end. And just to go back to what you were saying about the goalies, Pete, the reason why the goalies are doing as well as they are is the players in front of them are playing extremely well. They are collapsing to the front of the net. So if there is a bad rebound, you're clearing the front of the net. You're not giving up second chance opportunities the way they have in the past. Outside of that game in New Jersey where they fixed it right after that, where they were giving up goals off of rebounds. So, I mean, I just think analytics, as much as they're interesting and they play a role, I think they're just used so lazily. And, you know, guys are using them more for clout than for anything actually tangible, you know, because let's be honest, if any of these guys were actually as good as some of them believe they are, they would be working for an NHL team. So the fact that they're on Twitter probably tells you more than just about anything.
Yeah. I mean, I think the rise in analytics has a lot to do with Moneyball. That was very kind of, so. You know,
yeah. Oh, absolutely. Front of 100%. Analytics. Yeah.
Exactly. Across
everybody
all sports,
wants to be
right?
Peter Brandt.
And exactly. Now they don't have a team anymore.
Yeah.
Well, not quite yet. But yes, yeah. They're going to be going to Vegas, it looks like. I think, you know, I get that. And analytics, I think, are important. You know, even you hear Rick Tocchet talk about it. Yeah, they use analytics quite a bit. But the one thing that I think a lot of these, you know, Twitter personalities, I'll call them, they don't do the eye test, right? So they look at the box score after the game. They're like, oh, the Canucks were outshot 35-20. Oh, well, they were dominated, you know, in this metric and that metric. But like you said, Brendan, teams like LA, they shoot the puck at every angle. So you might have a high shot total, but how many of those shot totals, you know, Carolina's guilty of this as well. How many of those shot totals were actually high danger chances? You know, expected goals. Like, I don't even understand. I've tried to read up what an expected goal is. And, you know, it's still, you know, I'm still confused by it. And yes, shooting percentages.
Very convoluted.
It is. And what determines what's a high danger shot and what isn't? You know what I mean? Like, who's
subjective.
Determining exactly that metric of, oh, well, this is a high danger chance and this isn't. And I think, you know, often, and yes, look, last year the Canucks were getting hemmed in their own zone and they were getting badly outplayed and they were, you know, giving up five alarm chance after five alarm chance. But I think, you know, if you're actually watching the games and you're not just looking at the box scores after a Canuck game and seeing that they were outshot but came away with a 4-1 victory, you're doing half the work. Yes, the numbers do mean something. But you, again, you hear anyone who's a former player in coaching, in management, working in the league says, yes, analytics are important to us, but the eye test is also important. And there's certain things that you can't glean just by looking at the box score. And for me, that's what's one of the more frustrating things with analytics and the rise of analytics. And it's not just in hockey. You see this in baseball, you know, I mean, the Toronto Blue Jays, you know, starting
baseball
playoff game.
It's, you know, it's even worse.
It is. And I think that's the problem. It's like, you've got to believe if your pitcher, you know, again, I know we're a hockey podcast, but you know, if you're watching your pitcher and they're dominating, you know, mowing guys down and yet looking at the numbers, well, we need to pull them by the fifth inning because that's what the analytics, you know, numbers are suggesting. It's like, no, watch the game with your own two eyes and see.
Why have a coach if that's what you're going to do, right? If you're just going to go, if you're just going to have a game by a script. I mean, I'll just say this. Kevin Woodley is one guy that I do enjoy listening to who uses a lot of analytics because he puts it into context, which I think for a lot of fans, that's what we want.
Key.
We want context. I don't care what your math says. If it's not put into proper context with what you're seeing, I mean, I need that. And I think that's what all fans want. That's all we expect. Show me your math, but show me what that means with what you're seeing. Because a guy like Jay Fresh, I don't even think he watches half the games. Or maybe even even half the games. I don't even know if he watches any of the games. So, like, I mean, that to me is the frustrating part because he can't put what he's seeing, or Dom, whatever his last name, can't put it in what he's seeing or putting his math into proper perspective because he doesn't watch the games.
Another thing I wanted to say as well with a lot of these shot metrics, I'm not as interested in shot metrics myself. Like Corsi, Fenwick were kind of at the start of it. And again, they tell a part of the story. What people forget, though, is if you're a team taking a lot of shots, anytime that puck leaves your stick, you could be giving away possession. And I'm more interested in possession metrics, offensive zone, defensive zone, overall game time.
Neutral
they do this
zone.
A lot in soccer. Yeah, and they do this a lot in soccer. Like how much of the time when you're killing the penalty does the team actually have offensive possession in your zone? Like things like that, to me, that's more telling and more interesting. Shot metrics, I think it's a flaw. And this is something, I mean, you guys have both heard me rant about this on the podcast and when we've gone out for beers and watch games. You guys know how much I hate those power play shots from the Ovechkin spot. Because it's so easy to miss the net, ring around, or get picked off on the other side and just cleared out. And this is something. So that would, in a case like that, that wouldn't even count as a shot. That would count as a shot attempt, which goes into one of these other metrics in there. But it's the type of thing that you could have a grade A chance from there. but you miss the net. Now it's not a shot, doesn't show up on a score sheet anywhere, and it's also a turnover. And that's where a lot of the shot metrics I'm not as interested in, because if you've got, if you face 30, 35 shots a game, let's say, and but they're all perimeter and there's nothing in the slot and there's nothing in the high slot, that's okay with me. I'm okay with that. If you're keeping, you're forcing the team to be like, fuck it, we can't get anything into the middle. We're taking shots from over here from low percentage places. We're going to get 35 of them and maybe we'll get two or three goals that way. I'm okay with that. So for me, shot metrics, not as interested. I like what a lot of like the Premier League's doing with a lot of their possession metrics. I think those are more interesting. And again, that goes into what you guys are saying with context as well, with bringing that more into what you're trying to say, instead of like, hey, here's a hockey card of a guy. It says this. And it's just, it's, it feels like to me, it's, you're either trying to video game it or make it like a gambling tool or just like something that isn't really helpful for fans. And some people really get fall down this numbers analytics rabbit hole. I love numbers. I do like analytics, but I do think that a lot of us out there, they're getting consumed improperly, especially relating to shot metrics, because I don't think that's a good way to actually determine who's the better team, is by how many shots are going on net in a game and how many are going in.
Every team employs an analytics. I mean, I'm assuming now, and certainly the Canucks do. And I guarantee you their metrics and their the analytics that they use and the math that they use are nothing like what we're seeing from these guys. Because I consider what we're seeing on Twitter right now like a commercial brand analytics, yeah. Like stuff that's
hockey
sort of
cards.
Exactly. Like PDO is literally the dumbest stat I've ever. It's literally guys put two stats together just so they could create something that was easily understandable, and they could be used in their opinion to sound smarter than probably they probably are. Like PDO, it makes me shake my head, because it's the definition of that commercialized analytics. Very easy to understand for the average fan, which is good. I mean, it'll bring people, but in terms of what it means in terms of the grand scheme of things, for any team, to me, it's vastly overrated.
Yeah. And it's just, like you said, it's just two stats combined into one to give you this weird number. And no one even knew what PDO was, I think, you know, heading into this season. I would say the majority of hockey fans didn't. Neither did I. No. You know, but it's become a hot button topic. And I will say this, because I don't mind that Jay Fresh guy, you know, Dom. I'm not the biggest fan of Dom Lecision, but I don't mind that Jay Fresh guy. There's the Evolving Wild twins as well. They're pretty on point.
Is Big Head Hockey is another one.
Yeah. Yeah. Big Head Hockey is a good one. I do think, and I'm not saying any of us are doing this, but I do think as Canuck fans, we can be a little bit sensitive. And again, I'm not saying the three of us are, and I do feel like that, you know, finally we're good this year. And it feels like everybody's trying to diminish how good the Canucks are playing. And yeah, I know exactly. I get annoyed by it. I know you guys get annoyed by it, you know, and there's certain media members, I won't name names, and I don't mind the guy either, but you know, he just keeps going on and on and on about, oh, winning percentage and all this stuff. And yes, winning percentage is maybe a more comparable stat than total points. But it's just like, it just seems like no one wants to actually give this team credit, because they've doubled down and doubled down and doubled down for the last however many years that they can't just all of a sudden flip the script and give this team credit for what they've been doing. It's like, this isn't sustainable. Yeah. You know, and it's just like I get frustrated, because it feels like people are just not diminishing what this team has actually accomplished, which is remarkable. We're 19 points up on the Edmonton Oilers.
That's so
as
crazy.
Of December. What's the date? 19th.
20th.
As of December 20th, we are 19 points up on the Edmonton Oilers.
That
I don't know if
nuts.
They're playing tonight and if they're winning, but goddamn, that's amazing.
People don't want to admit that the organization was right from the very beginning, that what this team needed more than anything was structure, that structure was going to cure a lot of the problems. Hey, I'll pat myself on the back.
Hey, structure.
I've been saying that for five fucking years, guys. I've been saying that forever, that there's no way that this team can't play with structure. And then to have the organization come in and say that made me feel great. I'm like, finally, somebody sees this. I'm like, how can I can't be the only guy who sees this. And so, not that I feel vindicated, I'm just happy the team's playing really, really well. And that what you're going to get out of this now is hopefully a few years of really, really good hockey as this organization, who I feel like has a pretty good finger on what they want. You know, hopefully we'll be able to continue to grow this team along the identity. I mean, the fact that this team is where they are, where they are this early into this, like no one, like even me, who's a proponent of structure, I didn't think that they'd be this good this quickly. I mean, I'm quite frankly, in a lot of ways, stunned. I thought it was going to take a lot of time, certainly more than this. So for to have them buy in this quickly, I mean, hats off to the coaches, you know, and to the GM and to everyone within that organization, because, you know, they clearly knew what they wanted. They clearly saw and believed what they believed, and it's working out for them.
Yeah, it's I think that's the thing, right? It's like, look, we've had a decade of not greatness, of shit, and the team is good right now. Let's talk about that. Let's celebrate some of these amazing stats. Let's celebrate the fact that we've got players in the conversation for every trophy except for the Calder, even coach and managers in there. Like, this is supposed to be fun, and it is fun, but we still find a way to turn on ourselves because Canucks fans are a little crazy. Guys, we're running out of time here. Let's take this into the free pour.
All right, guys, it's that time of the episode for the free pour open floor segment. And I know this won't look, if you're not watching us on Twitter, you won't be able to see this, but I wanted to talk about this bottle of whiskey right here from the island. This nice. Is a distillery from Campbell River. They're doing some amazing stuff. They're called Shelter Point. Amazing whiskey. It's cool. They've actually got a little glass topper up the top as well. It's what I was drinking earlier in the episode. I'm not going to pour another dram for the free pour segment because I was drinking a dram during the episode. But yeah, Shelter Point, great distillery on Vancouver Island, doing some really cool things. Canadian whiskey. They got a bunch of different expressions. Great gift if you have the whiskey lover in your family. Definitely support these guys.
How long is that one aged for, Doug?
There's no age statement on this one, but they have released a 12-year-old this year. But this is finished. It was originally put in bourbon casks and then finished in Lafroy casks for, I believe, 8 months. And it's at 53% ABV. So it's got a little bit of smokiness without actual heat in it, but it's got a little bit of smokiness.
Beauty. I wanted to talk about travel a little bit. So I'm, as you guys know, I'm taking off in January for a few weeks. You guys are not going to have me on the episodes. I've been trying to, with this trip, get used to the idea of not bringing guidebooks with me and having the e-books, I guess. It has been really tough to kind of get used to this idea of not having books. And I'm trying to find travel books now, like Lonely Planet Rough Guides, and there's not a lot actually out there, the physical books. So for me, as someone who, you know, going back to the early days of travel when I was backpacking Asia or Africa or wherever, and always having that guidebook. And the guidebook is kind of like your Bible. And now it's just another case of how technology and travel has really changed. And trying to find physical books right now for this trip to South America don't exist, so I may be having to get used to this idea. I know I sound like an old man, but I just like having the physicality of the book, even though it takes up space. I miss it. I was in Indigo the other day, nothing. I'd be looking on websites, they're hard to come by. So anyways, I miss, you know, there's a lot of great things I miss about travel. Bulky books, pain in the ass, but I kind of miss that. So it's gonna have to be a new learning experience for me down there. Brandon, what you got?
I have a tendency to do a lot of death-themed things, which I kind of feel bad about. I don't know if you guys can see who that is, but...
Yes, I can.
Last week, we lost Andre Brouwer, who was one of my favorite actors. Obviously, most of the newer generation knew him from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I remember him more from one of my favorite movies, Glory. Where he plays the character of Thomas, who was the Freedman, who was part of the 54th Massachusetts Regiment. It was a Civil War movie. It's a fantastic movie. He was fantastic in that movie. You know, Denzel Washington ended up winning the Academy Award for his portrayal of his soldier in that movie. But in my opinion, Andre Brower was just as good and just as deserving of, at the very least, a nomination. In my opinion, he's one of the best character actors of our generation. He was as good in a dramatic role as we all saw in a comedic role in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And it's just sad because he was only 61 years old. And I believe he died of lung cancer. That's just far too young. He had so much more to give. And I'm sad that we won't get to see that, but we will, you know, have to settle for going back and going through the vast amount of work that he left us and enjoy that. So rest in peace to Andre Brower.
Thanks for tuning in, folks. This is season 5, episode 12, episode 158 overall, just about in the books. Also, on what you were talking about, Brendan, I watched The Mist last night, a Stephen King movie that he has a part in as well, which is a very good horror movie if you guys like that kind of stuff. Lots going on in Canucks land. Like I said, we're taking next week off. We got a few more games coming up. Canucks schedule gets a little staggered over the next little while, not as busy. So we will be back around January 3rd, I believe, is our next recording. In the meantime, though, you can follow us online. I'm at Pete_Gas on Twitter, and do check out our playlist on Spotify. It's Canucks Speakeasy outro playlist, also on Apple Music. I got to get used to saying that.
You can follow me on Twitter at Doug Venn. Be sure to follow the podcast on Twitter at Canucks Speak.
And I am at @Jabo_Vancouver. That's @Jabo_Vancouver. Also, click that subscribe button on YouTube. And let me just tell you all this. Don't let analytics people destroy your enjoyment of what's going on with this team. Don't let that. Enjoy the team. Enjoy the winning because, you know, this fan base definitely does deserve it.
As always, thanks for listening.
Hasta luego.
Merry Christmas.
Yes, happy holidays.
If I ever leave you all alone, if